Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
What is going on? Happy Monday. It's August 10th, and I'm still Pete Callender, still not Vince Coakley. He'll be in tomorrow, I believe. He's I think he had a dentist appointment today, and so I'd be happy to fill in, absolutely. I appreciate Vince and the folks at WBT and WORD letting me have the opportunity. I appreciate that. So, question for you, are you okay with Trump's pen and phone in a way that maybe you weren't okay with it when this fella was using the pen and the phone in different ways?
I'm going to be working with Congress where I can to accomplish this. But I'm also going to act on my own if Congress is deadlocked. I've got a pen to take executive actions where Congress won't. And I've got a telephone to rally folks around the country.
Yeah, so his pen and his phone, I recall, I'm old enough to remember this, people on the right were not very happy with the president using his pen and his phone in order to get Congress to go around Congress, because Congress wouldn't pass the DACA, right, the Deferred Action on Childhood Arrivals. And because Congress wouldn't do what he wanted, he cited the Get Stuff Done Clause of the Constitution. I think that's where that came from, the Get Stuff Done Clause, which, as I understand it, that's sort of the same constitutional provision that Donald Trump is citing when he issued these four executive orders. Well, three of them, what are they? There's one is actually an executive order, and then the three others are memoranda. And I'm not exactly sure if these things actually do anything, but look, there's a political benefit. I fully recognize the political benefit of these actions, because now you're going to force the Democrats to have to try to block you from providing relief, and it just looks bad. So I get that. But as one who tries to adhere to a consistent standard, particularly when it comes to, you know, political and philosophical principles, I have to object to the manner in which he did it. Just like I objected when Barack Obama did it. This is not the purview of the executive branch. Now, that's my sense of it. What's yours? 704-570-1110 or 1-800-WBT-1110. Because I can also see the argument that, hey, look, Obama did it, and then you had the Supreme Court ruling, what, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month or so ago, where John Roberts joined with the four liberals on the court, and they said, no, once an executive order is written, then I guess, you know, no president named Donald Trump is allowed to undo a previous executive order. I think that was the ruling. yeah, so if this is the standard now, if this is what's going to pass for acceptable rulemaking, then why should Republicans unilaterally disarm? So what do you think? 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. This is a piece at the National Review by Yuval Levin and Adam White. Levin is the director of social, cultural, and constitutional studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He's also the editor of National Affairs. And Adam White is a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute as well. And they had a big write-up on what these orders do. So let me give you just sort of the bullet points here on what these four, sorry, the one order and the three memoranda, okay? They're intended to offer some relief to Americans dealing with the consequences of the COVID-19 pandemic. The premise of the actions, made explicit in the text, was that Congress had failed to act, and now the chief executive just has to step in. It is a premise fundamentally at odds with the logic of our constitutional order, and it points to a number of dangerous dysfunctions in the American system. And this is now becoming bipartisan, right? If we all start accepting this, then where does that lead? Are we going to be okay with an executive order about, I don't know, climate change regulations? Like, that's, like, some of this stuff is truly concerning. How about Second Amendment regulations? Like, where does this end? You don't always get to write the EOs, you know, or the memoranda. So what do you think? 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. Let's start off with Jack. Let's see. Hey, Jack, how are you?
Doing great this morning. I hope you are, too.
I am doing well.
Good. The only difference to me, we had pen and phone, and now we have pen and tweet. It's wrong, period. I don't care who does it when they're overriding the legislature. And in addition to that, when the courts say you can't undo it, it's been history that every president can undo the previous one's executive orders if they so desire.
Right, which was why when Obama did it, the right was urging the left not to go down that path. And they were saying, look, if, you know, a Republican gets in and they start doing it the other direction, you're not going to like it. And Democrats were like, we don't care. And now we've got that very scenario playing out.
And now they do care.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing? Jack, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Let me go over to, this is Leo. Hello, Leo. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for putting me through. Yeah, I would agree with President Trump on this issue because you have to look at it from a context situation. You have the left that is pushing to keep everything closed down, don't go back to school, don't open businesses, and putting people in a position where they don't have any income. And you have government systems with the unemployment. President Trump went forward and said, look, you know, if you keep things shut down, at least give these people some sort of lifeline. And you know, right now it's $400 a week, which is better than nothing because the Senate was a deadlock on passing anything to go through. So I think context has come into play, especially if Congress is doing one action to create a situation and not offering a solution.
So what of the states that are run by Republicans? They can open.
They can, but what happens with the ones that open, if you still, we're talking about the federal unemployment.
Yeah. Well, federal unemployment didn't exist, right? The federal unemployment, it's
correct.
Unemployment insurance is a state program, and it's a tax, basically. These are fees that businesses pay into this fund and then get distributed out after, you know, people get laid off. So the federal program is just like an additional supplement. It's an extra check that they're handing out on top of the unemployment insurance benefits. So, a state is perfectly able to open completely up, and that shouldn't, I don't know, it shouldn't have any impact, right? Like, if a state wants to open, they should be able to open. So how do you blame Congress for that?
Well, the way I would blame Congress is that here's the thing. If you have so many operations that are shut down, schools and businesses, and we're hitting a thump on the economy, mm-hmm. you're looking for a way to keep people, and I guess I would say survival mode. Say you have two people in a family that they both worked in the restaurant business, or one mm-hmm. restaurant, and something that was where they had to be in front of people, and they can't do it now. I mean, I know personally people that have delivery businesses that are up against it with the type of product they were delivering.
Sure.
But that's just
you're talking about the general ramifications of the shutdown, and I'm saying that there isn't any reason for a shutdown in a Republican-controlled state if they're just shutting it down and then they could just open it up. It's their call, right? So that's not really up to Congress, unless you're saying that the Republican-led states, their shutdowns are fine too. So I'm sorry, I think we were kind of talking past each other. More of your calls, though, up next.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
All right, my name is Pete Callender. I am a former radio reporter for WBT years ago and a radio host, and now I'm doing my own show on radio.com. It's a free daily podcast that you can pick up at radio.com or at thepetecallendershow.com. You can also catch the show here on WBT on the weekends at 6 a.m. So we're talking about the president's three memoranda and executive orders. See, I just keep saying governor's executive orders so many times. But no, Trump did one. And honestly, Donald Trump has done far fewer of these things than I anticipated. He really hasn't. It's kind of funny. I hear people on the left always like, oh, he's a tyrant. He's doing all these things. He actually hasn't done a lot of stuff that a lot of people thought he would do, in charge of the executive branch and such. I've been pleasantly surprised with that. But these orders, okay, so first off, let me run through them real quick. These orders, they don't really do much. Like the eviction one, that is simply just instructing federal officials to look into ways to help renters facing evictions. There's no new authorities asserted or exercised. The second one is this memorandum on student loan relief. And it extends the deferral of student loan obligations, allowing borrowers to miss payments without penalties. The administration announced that policy back in March, and the CARES Act codified it through the end of September. And so the president says it's going to continue through the end of the year, even if Congress doesn't formally codify a new extension. But right now, it doesn't really change anything. Okay, third, the memorandum on aid to the unemployed that purports to fill this gap created by the expiration of the supplemental unemployment benefits, right? But since the president cannot appropriate new money, what the order actually does is it enables states to apply for FEMA grants under the Stafford Act and then use that money to provide additional unemployment benefits, right? So it's creating a whole new system, which could take weeks or months to actually implement before anybody ever sees that money. And then fourth, and this is the most controversial, this is the memorandum that suspends payroll tax payments for some workers through the end of the year. So if you earn less than $8,000 a month, then you can defer payroll tax payments from September through the end of the year, through December 31st. You would have to eventually pay those taxes back without penalties or interest, but the Treasury Secretary is instructed to, quote, explore avenues, including legislation, to have those back taxes forgiven. Okay, so that's what these four measures do. But all of these are aimed at doing things that the legislature should be doing but is unable to do because they can't agree on a compromise, because the Democrats come out with this $3 trillion proposal, same one that they offered up a couple months ago, and the Republicans reply with, you guys are insane. Are you on drugs? And we're not doing $3 trillion. And so they're like, we're not going to negotiate on this. Leave it up to the White House to negotiate this. And what happened before was that they ended up in the middle at $2.2 trillion. And so this is what the Democrats are angling for now, which led to this pretty hilarious exchange. Judy Woodruff of ABC News has House Speaker Nancy Pelosi on. Listen to this brief clip. This is what happens, by the way, when you are unaccustomed to media asking you difficult questions. Listen to this.
The other point Republicans are making is they are now showing flexibility in money for state and local governments. This is, again, a difference. Democrats want more money. Republicans want a lot less. They are saying they're willing to show flexibility. And they're also saying a lot of the money that was passed in the spring, Madam Speaker, has not even been spent yet.
Well, so if you want to be an advocate for them, Judy, if you want to be an advocate for them,
no,
I'm playing
devil's advocate to ask you for your position.
Oh, my goodness. No, that's exactly what she was doing. She wasn't even playing devil's advocate, I would submit. She was saying, this is what Republicans are arguing. So what's your response? And Nancy Pelosi's like, oh, you're going to just take their side in this? She can't even formulate an argument. It's pretty sad. It's what happens, you know, resistance to pressure builds strength. And when you don't get any kind of pressure, as a lot of Democrats don't from the media, they get kind of flabby on this stuff, you know, intellectually speaking. And so they're not capable of mounting solid defenses. And sometimes like that, it shows. Let me go over here to Terry. Welcome to the show. Hey, Terry, how are you?
I'm doing well. Good morning.
Good morning.
I tell you, the way I look at it is, for a long time, there has been a very, very strong movement to literally take over America. And this is just another step towards that. And just to give you an example, what the Democrats were asking for was $3.5 million.
Trillion. And
a big, big part of that was to bail out the Democratic, major Democratic cities
and states
that are bankrupt and hugely, severely underfunded as far as their pension plans and stuff. So in the past, and Nancy Pelosi very arrogantly would say, well, we want $3.5 million, and then the Republicans would say, well, I'm sorry, trillion.
Right, trillion.
The Republicans would say, well, we don't feel that much is needed. We do feel $1 trillion is needed to address the coronavirus. And then the Democrats would say, well, let's split in the middle. So just look how much needless money would be implemented, and all it's going to do is go to these cities that have given away everything. They've got all these sanctuary costs they have to cover. But it boils down to it's gotten to the point to we're kind of in a revolution where votes have replaced bullets. And if you just look all around us, Venezuela and all these Central America countries and all this other stuff, it's nothing but a power play. It's kind of like never debate your adversary, do everything you possibly can to personally destroy him. It's gotten to the point that it's nothing but a progressive, whatever you want to call it, left, socialist, or communist movement to take over the United States of America.
So a couple things. The natural tendency of all governments throughout history, the natural tendency of government is to take liberty from the people, and the natural tendency of citizens is to yield that liberty, usually in exchange for security. And this is why you get that axiom that, you know, you vote yourself into socialism or communism, but you usually have to shoot your way out. Like that's
exactly
generally how that goes. And so, yes, like I'm very concerned. You know what I actually said? You referenced, I think, some of the Saul Alinsky rules for radicals tactics that the left employs and has for decades now. Freeze your target, personalize it, all of that. But the strategy that I see at play with this, you know what it is? Have you ever heard of Cloward Piven? Have you heard of that strategy?
No, I have not.
So this was a political strategy that was outlined in 1966 by American sociologists and political activists Richard Cloward and Francis Fox Piven. And it called for overloading the U.S. public welfare system in order to precipitate a crisis that would then lead to a replacement of the welfare system with a national system of a guaranteed annual income. And they said this would end poverty. And what it had a side effect, just complete gravy, it's just a feature, that it also would strengthen the Democratic Party because they said they would be the ones to deliver these people to this nirvana, and they would be rewarded for it, and it would unify everybody around the Democratic Party. I see a lot of that happening, where you get people hooked onto these programs and onto a guaranteed income stream like this, and it becomes difficult to dismantle it. More of your calls up next.
This
Vince Coakley will be back tomorrow. My name is Pete Callender. You can catch my daily free podcast on North Carolina, local, state, and even national topics. It's at radio.com or thepetecallendershow.com. Donald Trump actually just tweeted within the hour. So now Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi want to meet to make a deal. Amazing how it all works, isn't it? Where have they been for the last 4 weeks when they were, quote, hardliners and only wanted bailout money, all capitalized, for Democrat-run states and cities that are failing badly? They know my phone number. So that was in line with Terry's call before the break there. that, yeah, the Democrats are looking to get as much money as possible to do as many things as possible, because it's, you know, Democrats are going to Democrat. It's a see a penny, spend a penny type of political transactional philosophy. And this, you can't really be surprised at how they behave, because this is sort of the hallmark of that party, and has been for my entire adult life since I've been paying attention to politics. And it's at the state level, it's at the local level, it's at the national level. Their answer to everything is more government spending, more government programs, more government services. And so, yeah, they come forward with a $3.4 trillion proposal, and it's ridiculous. And, yeah, they're looking to get money for their party that's been running cities very, very poorly. And, like, I'm sorry if that's offensive to some people to say that, but you look at, and look, I've had interviews with Dale Falwell, the North Carolina state treasurer, once a month for, 4 years. And we talk about the state of the pension plans. And he says, look, we're, you know, North Carolina we're the best when it comes to the pension management under his watch. But that's not saying a whole lot, because every one of these systems is in severe trouble. Why? Because a lot of promises got made for a very long time, with the idea being the check will come due at some point when the politician who makes the promise is long out of office. And in North Carolina, those people making those promises were Democrats. The state's been run by Democrats for over a century. Before 2011, over a century of one-party control in this state. Okay, so that's who made the promises. And now everybody's mad at the one guy, to quote Governor Chris Christie, you know, the one guy who's coming through the door and telling you the truth, and everybody gets mad at him. All right. If you want to weigh in on what we're talking about here, is the president's memoranda and executive orders that ostensibly go around Congress in order to do these things, to get like some sort of stimulus money flowing in response to the recession that was brought on by I know people don't like to call it the Wuhan virus, right? You're not allowed to, Wuhan flu. So, because I am a giver, and I am not looking to antagonize, or I'm not looking to be unnecessarily offensive, I just figure I call it the Chi-Com crud. And I think that's a fair, you know, middle point. That's just my opinion. Let me go over here to Joe. Welcome to the show. Hey, Joe, how are you?
Hi, am I Joe?
I don't know. Are you Joe? How long have you been calling yourself that? Are you Joe?
Yeah, this is great. This is great. Of course, you nailed it. The Democrats don't give a damn about anyone, Republican or Democrat. They want power.
No
matter what
are you gonna make
happens,
it?
That Trump says, they're going to disagree with and try to make him out a liar and this and that and other things to win votes. They don't care about people. They want government in control of everything. They want higher taxes. That's what Biden's running on, higher taxes. And so you're paying all your money to the government, and you're working. What are you? You're in slavery, the whole country. That's what communism is making slaves of free people. We're free people. That's why we have the Statue of Liberty that represents freedom for everyone. Everyone has equal opportunity. And we don't want to change that. And that's not a Republican or Democrat thing. That's a humanitarian type of thing.
But, Joe, it kind of has become a partisan thing, because if you have one party that has gone down the path of embracing a Marxist philosophy, and again, I don't use that term to be antagonistic or, you know, provocative unnecessarily. It's just true. I mean, you have a Democratic Party, and you can see it in local government. You can see it at our state government, and you can darn sure see it at the national level. Yeah, they have this wing in their party that is Marxist. And so that wing keeps dragging them as a party further and further left. So when you start talking about Marxism, yeah, we are talking sort of partisan terms, because one party is embracing some of those principles. All right, this is Joe number two on line two. Hello, Joe number two in Huntersville. How are you?
Good morning, my friend. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Question, will there be a stimulus package for the American people?
That's what they're negotiating right now.
The household.
Yeah, so the idea is that there are different components. One would be the unemployment supplement, but then there's another component, which is just like they sent out, like, what was it, $1,200 per person. You know, so if you were a dual-income household and you made less than, I think, $150,000, you got a combined $2,400. But if you're a single taxpayer, you got $1,200. And they're looking to do something like that again as well.
So Nancy and the Democrats are going to come over since what Trump did and start talking, right?
Well, they claim they've always been interested in talking. They always want to do this. And Mitch McConnell is the reason why it hasn't gone anywhere, because he sort of turned it all over to the White House. And the White House said, it's ridiculous, your $3.4 trillion idea. That's crazy. We're not doing it. And so the Democrats claim that they're the ones who are totally open to compromise, like, as Chuck Schumer said, meet us in the middle, right? So they come out with their $3 trillion proposal, knowing that the Republicans want $1 trillion, and then, hey, look, why don't we all agree on $2 trillion? So everyone's kind of happy. But Republicans and the White House don't want to even go to the $2 trillion, and so they're trying to frame the Republicans as the bad guys because they are not willing to meet them in the middle.
We don't want communism in this country, and it's not right. It's not right, and we know it.
Well, yes. Okay, so the narrative, though, rests on a fundamental assumption. Thanks for the call, Joe. I appreciate it. That narrative rests on an assumption that the $3 trillion was an accurate or supportable proposal in the first place, doesn't it? Right. In order to get to a point where you're going to say, well, OK, let's meet in the middle at $2 trillion, then it assumes that the $1 trillion was a justifiable position, and it assumes that the $3 trillion was as well. But I reject the idea that $3 trillion was a supportable, justifiable, rational position for the reasons that one of the big reasons was, like Terry mentioned earlier, these bailouts to cities and states run by Democrats that are protecting them. That essentially what it would do is protect them from their bad decisions over the course of decades. And the only way that voters will do anything differently is if they see the pain that their choices have wrought. Right? That's how that happens. That's how you self-correct. And if you're not going to get exposed to the painful ramifications, then you will never change the behavior. All right, I'm Pete. I'm in for Vince. More of your calls in a minute. (704) 570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. Vince is out today. My name is Pete Callender, taking your phone calls, and we're discussing the president's executive order and three memoranda aimed at getting around the inability of Congress to come up with a second relief package or stimulus. And I think I mentioned this earlier, that this is found, this authority is found under the Get Stuff Done clause of the Constitution, first identified by the constitutional scholar President Barack Obama in his last term. And the reason I ask this question is because, like, I criticized Obama's use of these types of executive orders because I did not think that they were permitted in our system. And I may be in the minority on this now. And so I'm also of the opinion that Donald Trump shouldn't be doing this stuff either. Although I point out as well that he hasn't done as much as I thought he would, nor has he done as much as Obama did. So I'm kind of pleasantly surprised at this. But the reason I asked this question is there was a write-up at the National Review. These are challenges that the courts are institutionally ill-suited to remedy, and they require the other constitutional institutions to take account of their responsibilities, and they require a citizenry keen to insist on the proper functioning of our constitutional order. And I'm not sure we have a citizenry that is keen to do that. I just don't think we have that any longer. I think everybody is willing to throw all the rules out the window, and it's Calvin ball until we start shooting each other. right? Like that's, it seems like there are a lot of people that think there's no problem with this trajectory. I am not one of them. But that's just me. What do I know? You know, I'm just a podcaster. Anita, welcome to the show. Hello, Anita. How are you?
Oh, my God. You are dead on. I'm enjoying your program. I just wanted to chime in on my thoughts. And the Marxist philosophy that the Democrats have embraced is getting dangerous. Mm-hmm. Because to continue with their power, I mean, they're actually, if you're against them, if you voted for a Republican, you're the enemy, and you can be beat down in the street. Secondly, on the money, as far as whatever happened to, here's what we've got to do, instead of putting all this other crap in there, and it's blackmail. My opinion.
Yeah. Well, yes, they're always going to try to get as much as possible into the bills, because when you are governing in a crisis, people are not paying as close attention. It's just get it out the door. This is why, from the very beginning, I said, if we're going to do helicopter money, which is, you know, you basically just fly helicopters over everybody and you just dump money out. And if that's the, you know, policy equivalent of what we're doing, then just do that, right? Just say everybody gets $2,000, everybody gets $1,000, whatever, and just do that. And that's it. And this way, you know how many people and you know where it goes. And there's a definable limit. There's a limiting principle there. But all of this other stuff that they stick in there, they do it because they know they wouldn't be able to pass it as a standalone measure.
But does it concern you media is the one not telling the dang truth and is actually promoting this crap?
Sure. Well, does it concern me? Well, yes, but after 20 years, I guess I'm kind of desensitized to the just sort of a baseline level of concern about media and their role in our political arena. They claim that they're just, you know, they're just the storytellers. They're just here to cover the balls and strikes, call balls and strikes, whatever. But you and I both know that they are participants in the political arena, and they pretend that they're not. And that's what makes them particularly odious, a lot of these people, that, you know, they push stories in certain directions. They ignore other stories when it's unpalatable and unattractive. So, yes, I've always been concerned with the media's role in this stuff and how they shape the narrative. I appreciate the call, Anita. Thanks so much. Let me go now to Stan. Welcome to the show. Hey, Stan. Hello, Stan.
How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. What's up?
I have a couple questions for you. I'm going to give you some things that we have in this country, and I want you to tell me if you think these are constitutional or not. And the income tax currently administered.
No.
Social Security and Medicare.
No.
The Federal Reserve.
No, probably not.
Probably not. Okay. Other any gun laws? The right to bear arms shall not be infringed because it's necessary to the security of a free state.
On that, I think that you can have some types of regulations, sure. Depends on what they are, though.
Okay. So, well, the question is, we're arguing about these executive orders being constitutional.
Mm-hmm.
That's like taking Tylenol for a headache and then wondering why the headache comes back.
Well, sure. But this is why the consistent application of standards and principles is so important. If you're not going to call out this, but you call out Obama's excesses, then you're not applying a consistent principle. And so I'm trying to apply a consistent principle. So when I do call out things that I believe are also not constitutional, then I have more credibility on the matter.
Yeah, that's my point. We need to be just go by the Constitution, period, and we haven't been doing it for a long time, and now we're reaping the consequences.
And that's hard, Stan. It's just hard sometimes to follow all of that.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Stan. I appreciate the call. Let me go to Jeff. Hello, Jeff. Welcome to the show. What's up?
Hey, Pete. Enjoy your show.
Thank you. You got about a minute, but it's all yours. Go for it.
Okay. I went to the drugstore and asked the druggist if I could get the malaria medicine if I had a prescription. And she told me, well, if you have a prescription that says it's for malaria or if it's for arthritis, we can give it to you. But if it's for the COVID-19, you can't get it. I said, why? She said, well, it's not safe for the COVID, but it's safe for arthritis. It's safe for everything. It's been around for about 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I can tell you how to get rid of this virus. Take the extra money they're paying the hospitals away. Take the extra money that they're paying the doctors away.
And that cures the virus. I was waiting to hear, like, in a related story, there's been an outbreak of malaria at Jeff's house. But, all right, news is next, and then more of your calls.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friend at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.